The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 35 of The Catholics of Oz. The Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello and welcome to episode 35 of The Catholics of Oz. We're so happy to have you joining us today. My name is Lindsay Sant. I'm the host of the show and I'm joined by my co-host slash sister slash awesome person slash insert title for Caroline here. Caroline Knight, how are you today?
I'm awesome, as you mentioned. Thank you, Lindsay.
It's just the two of us today.
It is.
So it's a brother and sister duo. So watch out, everyone, because I don't know, the brother and sister dynamic. Things get a bit crazy. We'll see how
we go. Might be a bit unchecked without somebody to keep us in line. But anyway.
Yeah. All right. So before we move on to the topics we're going to talk about today, we'd love to remind everyone, please, to like the Catholics of Oz on the SQPN Facebook page. Whenever a post about our new episodes come out, retweet our episodes on Twitter. Leave us comments, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app. And also don't forget that SQPN posts all of its episodes of its shows on YouTube. So you can go subscribe to StarQuest on YouTube and hit the bell to get notifications when new shows from SQPN, including The Catholics of Oz, come out. Also, on your podcast directory, whichever one you're using, please leave us feedback as well with a nice 5-star review, because it helps to get the podcast noticed and it helps us to reach more people. And that's what we're all about. So with that, let's start with Faith Beyond Borders.
Well, I'm actually feeling rather good about this. I think we've all arrived at a very special place, eh? Spiritually, ecumenically.
How do you make somebody love you without affecting free will?
Welcome to my world, son. If you come up with an answer to that one, you let me know.
Yes, I had to work very hard to pass Latin and theology?
Oh, quite. Those are, of course, the most important things.
Oh, yeah.
I'd sit this one out, Cap.
I don't see how I can.
These guys come from legend. They're basically gods.
There's only one god, man. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
So Caroline, there's been a lot going on in our world, and it always seems like there's always more and more going on. So, you know, we've had COVID-19, you know, we've had, you know, the effect that it's had on churches and, you know, we're slowly emerging from lockdown and things like that.
And in Australia, we've had started the year with the bushfires as well. That was a big issue for a lot of, it still is for a lot of Australians.
Yes. Yeah, we talked for about 2 or 3 episodes about bushfires at the start of the year. That was a really big one. Yeah. So much has happened, and it feels like, some of it feels like so long ago, but it's all been in 2020.
This has been a hard year. It's only June. Goodness.
Yeah, it's a challenging year. But, you know, they say get all the worst things out of the way at the beginning and it gets better afterwards. I hope that that's
true. Pray that's the case.
Yeah, we pray very much about that. But, you know, we also want to acknowledge and not shy away from things that are going on right now. So I'm referring to, in this case, the killing of George Floyd in the United States in the city of Minneapolis. And we wanted to give an Australian perspective because it has had a flow-on effect here in Australia as well. So we've, you know, Caroline and I and, you know, and lots of Australians, we've been watching the footage, you know, from on the news of things that are happening in the United States. So, and, you know, we care about you all and we hope you're all safe and well. Because we've seen that, you know, there are lots of protests. There's been, unfortunately, you know, some looting going on. But we've also seen the good things where, you know, protesters and police officers and other people have been hugging and even praying together. I've seen great hope in that. But we did want to talk about being Catholic and the Black Lives Matters movement. Because there has been, and, you know, I don't want to tell people what they should be doing. I want to keep that in mind for everyone who's listening. But there's been some discussion online. Can a Catholic support the Black Lives Movement? And there have been, you know, suggestions about, can you say Black Lives Matters or should you only say all lives matter? And there's been a lot of discussion about that. So Caroline and I, we wanted to talk about that a little bit this morning. And the reason we're talking about it is not to tell people what they should think, but we're genuinely interested in what you think. So I hope by the discussion that Caroline and I have now about this, it just might prompt you to share your thoughts with us as well, because we are genuinely interested, especially because this is an issue that that began in the United States. And I'm talking about the catalyst for the most recent version of it began in the United States. And again, it's had a flow-on effect around the world, including in Australia. And we'll talk about that soon as well. So we've got a link in our show notes to a video by Father Rob Gallia. It's a 1 minute clip where he talks. The title is Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter. All right, so in the video, basically what he's saying is that he acknowledges that essentially both are correct. Of course, all lives matter. Of course they do. But what he's saying is that at this very moment, there's a section of our community that's hurting. For particular reasons, and we'll go into those reasons soon about why they're hurting. But there are people in the Black community, and I'll include the Indigenous community here in Australia, who are feeling affected by the footage of George Floyd on that tragic day. And so what he's saying is, imagine that you're at a funeral. And the funeral is for a child, a young child, and the mother is there giving the eulogy, and she's saying, my daughter, she was beautiful, she was smart and intelligent. And then someone runs into the funeral and says, but wait, all children are beautiful and intelligent, not just your child. And so, and Father Rob is saying, that's true. Of course they are. But at the moment, we're focusing on this one place where there's a lot of pain going on, where, this person is suffering the pain of the loss of their child. And we surround those people with love and we care about them. So saying, yes, all lives matter. Absolutely. And, as Catholics, we double down on that. We say from conception to, the last breath a person takes, and we won't shy away from that at all. But also within that dynamic of every life, there are particular times where we're called to be a little bit more sympathetic, a little bit more empathetic when there are people in our communities who are hurting for specific reasons. And so that's what his video is going on about there. Caroline, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess when there's an issue that's brought up, it's inevitable that someone's going to say, somebody says, oh, this is my cause and it's important right now. And then other people will come in and say, yeah, but what about my cause? My cause is important as well. And that's inevitable. But look, at this time, this footage of George Floyd being killed, okay, this really sparked something. It was devastating to watch, and I completely understand the anger, because I got angry watching it. I cannot believe that somebody can do that to someone else.
Yeah.
That someone can degrade someone else so much and not even care about it. Okay. So of course, the Black community are going to be upset because they have had enough, okay? Yeah. I totally understand where they're coming from. So, yes, all lives matter, but at the moment, the Black community are feeling that their lives have not mattered.
Mm.
So right now they want to tell everyone Black lives do matter, because they'd feel like Black lives don't, and they haven't for a long time. And this stems from slavery in the US and slavery in other countries too, where Indigenous populations and other populations have been used as slavery. Just, people have been just treated like they weren't human, And that's a hard feeling to have, That's a hard feeling to have. So I feel their pain. I have not experienced it myself. Obviously, I'm an immigrant to this country, and I'm grateful to the Indigenous that we can come and live here, and share their country with them. And I really feel that they need to be acknowledged more and supported more by us than by government. So I can understand enough is enough. And the protests are showing enough is enough. People are angry. People want recognition. as, you know, want to be recognized as human beings and that they matter just as much as every other person matters. So I get it, you know, I get it.
Yeah. I might provide a couple of – so we wanted to shift to the Australian perspective on this issue as well.
Yeah.
So I can talk about why our Indigenous population feel affected by the situation.
Yeah.
Because some people might say, well, actually, they're disconnected. they're not Americans. You know, they're not African Americans. They haven't experienced this or that or whatever else. So I also want to be careful because – I should throw in at this stage as well that we're not anti-police, and we're definitely not throwing accusations at all police, but there are certainly, you know, clearly, you know, there are some issues in some police because, you know, America is a very complex country made up of many different states, and I'm sure there, and again, American listeners, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming that the police systems in each country are essentially quite different in the way that they're run, administered, the training happens, and whatever else.
In the states.
And so within that, you're going to have issues where the training may not be enough, you know, to deal with, you know, situations like arresting a person or whatever else. But the point I'm trying to get at here, moving on to the Australian context, is that in Australia, we've actually had this happen a few times already. We've had this moment's happened. So in 2015, David Dungay, he was a young Indigenous person who was in prison. He committed crimes. So I'm not going to sugarcoat whatever else. He committed crimes, right? He was a criminal. He did some things he shouldn't have done. However, there was a particular point during the time when he was in prison where he had a packet of biscuits in his cell and he was eating them. And from what I understand, he wasn't actually allowed to do that. So security for the prison went to the door of his cell, you know, told him to stop, to hand them over, all those kinds of things, and he refused. And they basically said, you know, we're going to use force, you know, if you don't comply. And so he didn't comply. So they went into his cell and they held him down on his bed and they effectively, you know, made it difficult for him to breathe. And he said, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. So you can imagine that when our Indigenous population are watching the footage of George Floyd, it brings up some pretty pretty difficult memories, you know, for them as well. Because
there's some deep wounds there. Yeah,
there are some wounds there. That's right. So from memory, I think the Indigenous population makes up about 3% of Australia. I hope I'm correct about this.
It's not big, yeah.
Not big. There's about 800,000, I think, from memory. So again, if anyone wants to correct me on the stats, please do. What we're seeing at the moment, and this has been a long-standing thing that hasn't been improved completely yet, is that the deaths inside prison, prison for the Indigenous population, is higher per capita than anyone else who dies in prison. So, you know, for example, there are more non-Indigenous people that die in prison than Indigenous people, but if you compare the populations, Indigenous people die in prison at a faster rate or at a higher rate than anyone else. And so this is an issue that needs to be looked at. In the Northern Territory, 100% of the people in juvenile prison are Indigenous.
Yeah, so sad.
Yeah. So but it highlights that we've got an issue that we haven't completely dealt with yet. Now, Australia has made a lot of moves, like to do things about it. So, for example, there in 2008 or 2009, I'll get this wrong, but the then Prime Minister Kevin Rudd issued a national apology to Indigenous Australians, and this was in particular because of the Stolen Generation. So we actually had, and there are people with living memories of this, Indigenous people with living memories of family members being taken away. So children were essentially taken away by the government. They were adopted into, and I use the term carefully, they were adopted into white families in what was called at the time the White Australia Policy. So the whole idea was to, so the words that were used, and there's historical footage of this, was to essentially civilize the Indigenous population. So there was this, there's an indigenous population, we need to fix them. That was the policy.
Yeah. So sad.
Yeah. So, Australia has its history, it has its terrible history as well of things that happened to Native Indigenous Australians. And to bring it full circle, because this is where I was trying to get with this, is our Indigenous people know the pain of not feeling like equals yet.
Yeah.
To the point where our government has had for a decade now, national standards in a campaign and a policy called Close the Gap. And the idea is to bring Indigenous people on par with everyone else in Australia in terms of health outcomes, in terms of less infant deaths at birth, in terms of education. And there were 8 or 9 goals, I think. This year, the start of this year, we were still woefully inadequate in terms of meeting those goals. We have some improvements in terms of Indigenous education and a couple of other things, but by and large, the country still hasn't done enough to ensure that equality.
Yeah,
Caroline,
for sure.
I've said a lot. Any thoughts or reflections that you have yourself?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't even know where to start. Obviously, there are issues in their communities, Indigenous populations that need to be addressed. I think there's not enough support for them. People and government need to provide more support so that the juvenile prisons are not full. Let's not put those children in juvenile prison. Let's go and find out what social problems there are and try and address those so they don't have to go and be detained. I saw footage the other day. It was not long after George Floyd was killed, of a teenage Indigenous person mouthing off to a police officer. And personally, I mean, I don't know how it works with the police and what makes them apprehend somebody, but all he was doing is mouthing off from the footage is what I could see. And the police officer proceeded to go over to him, handcuff him, swipe his feet from under him, and the poor boy fell on his face and broke a tooth, hurt his jaw, hurt his knee. I mean, I'm not really sure what warranted that kind of a response. I mean, when you see that kind of footage, it just, it just does make you feel that maybe they're not treated as equally as other people. I don't think a teenage boy should be treated in that way, to be honest. You know, if he's mouthing off, that's what kids do, okay? My kids mouth off at me. I just, I don't handcuff them, okay? So, and then unfortunately, our Prime Minister a few days ago said there's never been any slavery in Australia. He was completely wrong. And that highlights that us as Australians growing up here have never been taught the true history of this country. Yeah. It's a bit of a whitewashed history where Captain Cook in 1788 came with the ships of the Endeavour or whatever, brought some convicts over and we settled Australia, the end. Okay, it's far from the truth. Like,
I can remember that's what I was taught in primary
school.
That's
what we were taught.
And it's all true. However, it's not the complete story.
There's so much more surrounding this. I mean, the Aboriginal populations were decimated in places.
Yeah.
They were treated unfairly. They were enslaved. Okay, there were a lot of plantations and things where Indigenous were handcuffed and treated very badly. They were not, there was a policy where people didn't, they put away funds that were supposed to be paid to the people, but they were never paid out, so a lot of injustice has happened. And so I understand why the protests are happening here as well. And even though there's a pandemic and we're not supposed to be protesting, I can see why they want to come out at this time because.
Yeah.
They feel so passionate about it, and we support it. You want it. It's another issue altogether. Protesting during a pandemic, but you can see that
There's a whole discussion there, isn't
that's
there?
That's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get into that really. But what I'm saying is that that's an issue. It's really cut deep. There's deep wounds there.
Yeah.
And this needs to be addressed in our country. So, do Black Lives Matter? Yes, of course.
There was the Catholic Church in Australia, so it's had a mixed history with Indigenous people, but there was a moment where Bishop Polding, he's an early well-known historical, one of the big historical like bishops of Australia. There was a lot that he did that was important for the church in Australia. I remember reading a letter or a note to, I think it was to a government official or someone. He was essentially enraged by the treatment of Indigenous people, basically saying, their blood is in this. So I remember doing history in high school and reading about some of the massacres and the way that they were, regarded. They weren't really regarded as massacres. They were regarded as like culling,
or
revenge, things like that. Yeah. So really dehumanizing kind of stuff. So there's generations of pain in our Indigenous community. It's important, I guess, to acknowledge that. Yeah.
And actually, anti-slavery campaigning, I'm just reading, has been going since about the 1860s. So people did recognize that they were being treated unfairly from a very, very early time in Australia's, colonization history. So it's been going for a long time, and it's kind of sad that we haven't got to a good place yet. It's like we should, can we do more? I mean, come on. And I mean, like, we take the model in New Zealand, where I think they've made a lot of strides towards this, where the Maori language is used on signs and in official documentation and stuff like that. And they have more of a positive attitude towards helping their Indigenous people. They learn the language in schools and stuff. I just think it would be great if my children could perhaps learn the local Indigenous language in their school. I think that would be a lovely thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that too.
Yeah, if we can be more involved in the culture, stuff like that, So, I mean, Australia is – Melbourne as well, we live in Melbourne, is a very multicultural city. Why can we not include the culture of our Indigenous people? I just think that would be lovely. And, you and I don't actually have any Indigenous friends. I find that so sad. I don't know anybody. I wish I could know somebody, Reach out if you're listening, please. I would love to hear from
you. Absolutely, if you're listening. Because I've spoken to Indigenous people. I've had, been to presentations by Indigenous people and, had little chats with them. But definitely not an experience of any of our lives. And I guess, one thing is, again, because the population is so small, so you're not going to find... And the concentration of where they live as well is also something there are Indigenous Australians in Victoria, but... The vast majority are more sort of up north as well.
Definitely.
New South Wales and higher, yeah. I just wanted to add as well, just to highlight this issue a little bit further. We had Reconciliation Week. By the time this podcast comes out, it'll be about 3 weeks ago. So it's every year, and it's a week where Australia remembers the cause of reconciliation, and which a very Catholic word, by the way, where we're trying to reconcile the past of Australia's history with Indigenous Australians. For this year, there was a group that put out a film called In My Blood It Runs. And there's a 54-minute version and an 84-minute version. And so we've decided to show the 54-minute version to all of our students at the school in our religious education classes with a religious education focus, of course. But the thing is, the documentary follows this Indigenous boy, Duan, for about 3 years. And there's no voiceovers or no, like, and now here's Duan in his home, or nothing like that. It just follows him and encounters that he has. But it becomes really obvious that he is a beautiful, wise, intelligent, amazing young boy, mature beyond his years when he's an Indigenous person, when he's allowed to live in his Indigenous culture. When he goes to school in Alice Springs, he fails everything. He's not getting his work done. He's misunderstood. He's disciplined by his principal at one stage and eventually expelled from his school because he's not doing the right thing. And it's not because he's a bad kid, but it's because the education system hasn't recognized who they have in their classroom. And you know, there's a scene where a teacher is reading, you know, they're having story time and the kids are sitting on the floor and the teacher is reading a book. It's like this poetry book, you know, bad poetry, I should say, about Captain Cook coming to Australia and how awesome it was and things like that. And he's sitting there not relating to it all. And there's another part where the teacher is talking about Indigenous spirituality from a book. And then she's not dismissive, but she speaks about it in a way that, because she doesn't understand, she's like, oh, you know, someone else might understand it, but I don't, that kind of thing. And it's not to bash the teacher at all, not at all. I don't think the teacher deserves any condemnation at all. But what it does highlight for us, and what I'm grateful for, is it highlights that there's still a misunderstanding of Indigenous culture and an expectation maybe that they should just be like us,
yeah,
if that totally. Kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, of course, you know, and so what happens, you know, naturally, because they're not fitting in necessarily, and then they're committing crimes. And when I say they, I'm not saying all, but, you know, this is the general issue. You know, Duan lives with, you know, his mother is saying, if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to end up in juvenile prison. You know, so that it's in their psyche that Indigenous people go to prison. I think what's good about the documentary is it's not condemning anyone. It's not saying, you know, if you, you know, you're all a bunch of racists or whatever, which is important. It's so important to not go with accusations to start with. But what it's saying is maybe we need to understand a little bit more. And I think that's fine. I find that humbling.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for us to, any culture, doesn't matter who they are, but to understand any culture. As a teacher, for example, I have to know something as much as I can about every student who's in my class. So how they learn, who they are, you know, I've got access to, to just as much as I need to know about their family situation, because that affects the way they learn in my classroom, their religious or non-religious background, things like that. The more I know, the better I'm able to engage with them, and the more I'm able to get out of them in terms of their classwork. And I think that's the same with relationships. The more you know someone, the more fruitful your relationship with them is going to be. And so maybe in Australia, that's, you know, clearly we're talking about closing the gap. I mean, the misunderstanding, I think maybe the reason why we have this gap is that maybe Australia doesn't understand Indigenous culture enough yet.
I would agree completely.
And clearly this is a big topic because we've been talking about it for a while.
I know.
Yeah. And again, we started this discussion because we're interested in what you know, our listening community have to say about it, because we're not coming up with solutions necessarily, and we're not telling people what they should do, but we're just genuinely interested in how we reconcile in everything, in the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, there are things that they say that that we're very uncomfortable with. But there are things that they say which the Catholic Church can easily get on board with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, life matters. You know, at this moment, Black lives matter a lot. We would love to hear what you have to say. This is dialogue, not, not a one-way conversation or anything like that.
And we wanted to highlight that it's an important issue, something that we need to speak about, and we didn't want to shy away from it, even though it's a difficult topic to talk about, and maybe people may not agree with what we're saying, but
which is fine.
Which is absolutely, because everyone has an opinion. But it is. I find it hard to talk about because it's such a I'm very passionate about it, and you are too, and a lot of people are. So, you know, we try to keep lighthearted on our podcast, but we felt like we really needed to speak about it today. So
And I hope from listening to us people get the impression that we really wanted to depoliticize it as well, and just talk about it as a human issue, not a political issue. It's not about a particular side. I mean, there's only one side at the end of the day, and that's humanity's
side. We're all on each other's side, and we need to support each other and love each other, because no one's better than anyone.
So maybe the important thing from here is let's continue to pray that, that God will show us a way forward. Jesus wants us to be one, we're one world, one community in terms of humanity with our difference, which we have. But, if the Trinity is a community of one where there's just love generating more love, how can we emulate the Trinity in our community with everyone, regardless of who they are, and show Christ's love to everyone as the source of everything that's good, the source of everything that frees us and liberates us. You know, everyone deserves to have that. And so this, I guess that's probably the foundation of what we're on about as Catholics when we talk about issues like this.
So true. Well said. Means good on you.
That came from my brain.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah.
All right. So why don't we move on to another topic, another relatively heavy topic. So, Caroline, we're going to talk about science.
Ah, what a fine day for science.
You have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Can you reverse the polarity?
I'll do my best.
All right, so Caroline, I'm going to throw this over to you because this one requires a bit of explanation. So can you introduce our little scientific, it's kind of a moral topic today. So talk about our scientific moral topic for us.
Yes. So, okay. So it's another deep one. Get ready.
Sorry, everyone.
Hold on.
It's a deep episode today.
Okay. So everyone, most people on Earth are they know that we are currently in a pandemic with the COVID-19 illness caused by the SARS-CoV-2 virus that's going around at the moment. So now the issue, now that we're going through this pandemic, a lot of people, you know, are saying now that we need the vaccine so that we can get over the pandemic and get back to normal life. So there's a bit of a rush on vaccine development now by various companies. Now the issue for Catholics and anyone who has an opinion on this or feels strongly about this is the issue about using cells from selectively aborted babies to manufacture vaccines. Okay, so I told you it's a heavy one. So, so this particular article I found, it talks about specifically. Okay, there are some companies that are not using it, but not using these cell lines. But there are companies who are, and I guess the whole issue really is about the choice. So will we have a choice? So whoever gets to make the vaccine first, if it happens to be made from one of these cell lines, do we take the vaccine or not? So basically, the US Conference of Catholic Bishops in America and other leaders and anti-abortion groups in America and Canada have been raising their ethical concerns about manufacturing the vaccines. And they've been asking for companies to consider developing vaccines that don't rely on the human fetal cell lines. And in the US, they've been asking the government to incentivize companies that only create vaccines using other types of methods. And and in Canada as well, they're also asking their government to, use other methods other than these stem cells. So what do we know? We know that there's many vaccines that we have taken that have been created using these cell lines. So I didn't know about this until a little while ago, I guess. But, you know, measles, mumps, rubella, we've given them to our children, all of that kind of thing. So now I'll just clarify that currently no new aborted fetus cells have been used, but these ones in particular, so there's one called HEK293, which is a kidney cell line. This was procured from a 1972 abortion, a selective abortion, so that child's cells now are used. And there's another one called PERC6, which are retinal cells from an 18-week-old fetus. From 1985. And when you say those things, it's kind of like they've got this arbitrary number given to a child cells. I find that really distasteful,
of course,
is one word. Yeah. So five trials that this article highlighted are using these cell lines and two have gone into human trials already. So two ways these cells are used in these particular studies. So one is to manufacture, so they've got the cells to create. So the cells, the way they use the cells is basically as a manufacturing. So the cells create what the scientist wants in the end, creating a vaccine. So first way in this case is that cells are used to manufacture a different kind of virus called an adenovirus, which is disabled. So it doesn't cause an illness, but it does trigger an immune response. The virus will, it has the spikes from the COVID-19 virus.
Yep.
And it elicits a response. And so your body learns to make a response. So if you get infected with it again, you'll be fine next time. You won't get the illness, or you'll get like a dumbed down version. You get over it quicker. Another way is that proteins are actually manufactured in the cells. So just the spikes on the virus. And this one company wants to make a skin patch with 400 tiny needles. So you just put it into your skin and the proteins go into your arm. Just saying 400 tiny needles kind of makes me just want to have one needle. But anyway.
I'll pass. You go first.
So I'll just pull up this article here. So there's a bit of a controversy. There's a bit of an argument between those who support using the cell lines and those who don't. Where are we? Yeah, so there's David Prentice, Vice President and Research Director of Charlotte Lozier Institute, which opposes abortion, notes researchers making adenovirus vaccines have actually modified the cells. So it's not actually just the plain cells themselves that make the virus. They have to change the cells themselves. And so he says you don't need to use these cells, but other scientists say, no, these cells are essential. You can't make the vaccine any other way. Mm. But the issue really is that, you know, there's got to be better ways to produce these vaccines. We have been making vaccines, say, using chicken eggs. You know, that's been a long way. And currently flu vaccines are still used, are still created using chicken eggs. There's been other, you can actually use fetal cells, but you don't have to use aborted fetal cells. So abortion in itself is morally objectionable, you know. Anyway, so like it's a horrible thing to abort a child, but then to go and use their cells, I mean, in science, and then I don't even want to mention what other body parts and things. Anyway, that's another issue, but, you know, they are used in science, which is just completely objectionable, just horrible. But so the issue really is, you know, let's look at other ways. We don't have to take the easy way and just get these cells that, you know, these existing stem cell lines that are already there. Even though they're decades old, there is an ethical problem for people who do not want to be involved with having a vaccine that has come from the cells of, it's a child, okay?
Yeah.
With however you look at it, a child starts from conception. It has to get there somehow. You can't say it's just cell. It's not just cells, okay? An embryo is a small human. It's nothing else, okay?
Yep.
So there are alternatives, okay? You can use fetal cells from placental cords, you know, from women who have just given birth. There are plenty of cells, stem cells, all sorts of cells in there. If a woman consents, you know, it would be a very hard thing to talk about, but if you know, a woman has a miscarriage, you can obtain the stem cells from there. These are a bit more ethical ways of obtaining the cells. Ectopic pregnancies, you have the fetal cells there. I guess the point is that you're not deliberately destroying a life to use the cells for the vaccine production. So there are other ways. Animal cells, you know, I guess the idea against animal cells really is that, you know, if a person has an allergic reaction, or you're introducing something else from an animal into the human that we're not quite sure about, you know, we don't know what the consequences will be. There's an article saying, you know, that you can even in, you know, when there's the amniocentesis test, like when a woman is pregnant.
Yeah, I read that.
And cells are taken for testing. That's also a more ethical way of doing things. So you can get these cells from other sources, tissue banks. There's just lots of, you know, a child doesn't have to die for you to create a vaccine, basically.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that there's alternatives, that
this
shouldn't be considered as the only route to create a vaccine. And in fact, there are many, many other routes to getting to a proper vaccine that don't need to require these illicit kind of means.
That's right. You've got scientists on both sides of the fence. You've got those who say, no, the fetal stem cells are the best way, and they're easy to get. So let's just get them, you know, let's use those. And then you've got the other scientists that say, no, let's have a look. We're smarter than this. We can use other means. Okay.
Right.
So having said all that, let's get into a bit more of a deeper discussion.
Let's get some moral discussion. Now that we've got the science sorted.
Because look, I mean, you know, I studied in the science field, and I had to write a paper which I got marked down for, because this was a biotechnology paper that I was writing, and, you know, the issue came up of using embryonic stem cells, right? But you have to take the embryo. It was a destructive way, okay? So, and I was saying in my paper that I don't recognize that we should be doing that. I said, you know, that we should, that it's not moral. It's still a human, because they go, oh, it's not human. It's tissue. Like, that's the attitude that was coming across, which I was shocked about, because like not everybody agrees with that. So really, maybe they shouldn't teach that. But anyway.
So the starting point, it sounds like, in the discussion, just to get my head around this, the starting point in these discussions that you would have at uni were not really to talk about that, because the assumption is they're not human. So you don't have to worry about the moral, that moral part. You just start from step one.
It's an embryo. It's a fetus. Yeah. It's all it is. Okay.
Yeah, so step one is it's cells to be used. Not a cell to be used. Yeah.
That's it. But my stance is, well, yeah, it is, but it's a human. And I wrote that in my paper and I got marked down. So I was like, okay, well, that put me off that. So maybe I won't pursue that side of things. So, okay, Lindsay, let me put this to you. If now a vaccine is created for COVID-19 and the only option now was this, it's created from one of these cell lines that came from a selective abortion, would you take the vaccine or would you refrain from taking the vaccine, considering how bad COVID-19 can get?
First, thanks for the easy question. So I'm going to try and go with a short answer, because I don't know. It's a very challenging question. So let me look at it from this perspective. So the first thing is, I would definitely 100% say no if the production of a vaccine, like the continued manufacturing of a vaccine, required the continuous destruction of human life. So first of all, if that's where we were getting a particular vaccine from, I would be looking for an alternative for sure. I wouldn't be, wanting my health to rely on the death of another human being in the sense that, you know, like an abortion or something like that, right? So I'd be totally against that. Now, we've got another. So I've been looking at some church teaching on this. And by the way, moral theology is hard.
It is.
All right. The way that these guys talk, that is very wordy. And they don't simply go with yes and no. They go with yes, but no, but. And but no, no, but yes. You know, and it, because there are, because the thing is, context and circumstances are really important. So let me look at it like this. I want a vaccine for COVID-19, as I want a vaccine for other you know, diseases and things like that and whatever else. I am not a fan of any vaccine that has come from you know, fetal cell lines. I'm trying to use science here. Sorry. Even if those fetal cell lines, as the discussion has been in the articles you read, came from the 1960s. All right. The point is that you know, that's what they were used for. So in my reading of moral theology, and by the way, everyone, please correct me on this. I'm happy to be corrected. Again, this is a discussion. It's not me telling people how it is. But in my reading and interpretation of what I've come across when we were researching this issue, if a baby was deliberately destroyed to get a vaccine, if that was the purpose of the abortion, we would have a serious, serious, serious issue with that. And cooperating that with that would be morally very, very difficult. If it's cells that they obtained from an abortion for whatever reason that are now being used, you know, to create a vaccine, we are not morally culpable for that event happening. Someone else has done that and has, in a way, put that on us, that this is the only way to get cured for this particular disease. So now that's the circumstance that we could find ourselves in. So let me also note that in the reading, Caroline, and let me just correct me if I'm wrong on the numbers, but there were over 100 different groups that were working on a vaccine and five or more, whatever it was. But it's five of them in particular that are actually using fetal stem cells, like cell lines.
Those are the ones that were highlighted in this article.
In that article, yeah.
I did try to look up, for example, in Australia, it's very hard to find information. Yeah. You know, I know that I think CSIRO are developing vaccine and things like that, but this is the only article I could find that would actually offer up who is using them. So,
So we'll pop that in our show notes for people to do their own reading. All right, so let's say now that we're in a situation where this is the only vaccine. Let's just say vaccine number one that's come out, and we've been told, I'm just making up a circumstance or an issue, that the next vaccine won't be available for the next 5 years, right? Whatever, or 12 months, whatever it is. If it's the only vaccine available, and if what we're doing, taking the vaccine, is for the protection of our lives and also for the protection of the lives of people around us, then the Vatican, from my reading, there was a document in 2017 about this, I'll put it in the show notes too, would say it's okay to take the vaccine. You know, we as Catholics can do more as well. So, for example, we can object in writing to companies and to politicians, you know. So, yes, we might have to take the vaccine because we have no choice. It's all there is that exists. But we can still be talking, you know, and objecting, you know, and having campaigns, you know. Like, you know, when we mobilize a lot of Catholics, a lot of things can happen. When, you know, when one Catholic speaks on their own, no one listens. But when you know, there are lots of us. So, we can demand an alternative and be listened to as well. And especially when it comes to hitting the hip pocket of some of these companies financially by saying, well, I'm not going to buy this or support this company, which supports you financially, whatever as well. We do have ways to demand moral things as well. And, you know, it shouldn't be expected that we should simply just accept, you know, that aborted cell lines are the way to go. However, so let's think about this. Let's look at other, you talked about measles vaccines, I think it was, and others that
measles,
also.
Measles, mumps, rubella, right. The ones that rubella, you give your children. Yeah.
So let's think about this now. If that's where they've come from, and for the protection of people around us, it might be more moral to take it than not to take it. And the reason I say this is because think of people whose immune systems are suppressed. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I know someone who can't get vaccines because they have an allergy to particular things that are in them and it would actually be harmful. There are a percentage of people who can't have vaccines.
So
they rely on herd immunity, on everyone else getting vaccines so that they won't get sick. Or a pregnant woman, who, you know, we know that there are certain like rubella and other things that can cause conditions in their babies while they're in the womb as well. So I went to high school with a young boy who was deaf because his mum had, you know, she contracted rubella while she was pregnant, you know, so we have to look at all of these things and weigh up, you know, what is the more moral thing to do in a circumstance. We don't, you know, taking a vaccine that comes from this particular source doesn't mean that we approve or we like it. But at the moment, it may be the only way to reduce a particular disease or stop a particular disease. We've seen, for example, in Australia, where clusters of people have refused to take measles vaccines, and there are outbreaks of measles in those communities now. And that puts other people at risk, if that makes sense. Yeah. Exactly. And I don't want to tell people that you should or shouldn't be getting vaccines, but you know, we want to have a complete picture of what's going on. So the Vatican talks about the idea of grave inconvenience, and this is a really difficult one to define, because even the definition of it is really hard to unpack. But the whole point is that you can excuse yourself from a particular idea from the church if it's the right thing to do in a particular circumstance. So it's not about excusing very illicit, immoral things, but on the level of whether you should take a vaccine or can take a vaccine from, that its origin was in fetal cell lines, the answer is yes, you can. Essentially, yes, you can take it. If, first of all, there's no other alternative, and if other people are going to be put at risk by you not taking the vaccine, or if you're going to be at risk by not taking the vaccine, if you're going to get sick with an illness and die. We'll keep that there. Now, again, if it came from, you know, if the manufacturer depended on the continued, you know, abortion of pregnancies, then no way. Sorry, find another alternative.
Yeah.
And so while we are taking a vaccine that may come from a source that we're not proud of, and that we're definitely against.
Yeah, I think you make some really valid points there. And I would, you know, when I gave my children their vaccines, I had no idea that's where they came from, to be honest. You know, because a lot of those vaccines are developed using those aborted fetal cell lines. And it's kind of sad, but, you know, I guess my first thought when I went to get my children vaccinated was, I want my children to be protected from these diseases. And, you know, I've seen, and, you know, there's also whooping cough and all of that, you know.
And they can be quite devastating, quite fatal as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a first-time mother, especially with my firstborn, I my instincts kicked in straight away. I need to protect this child. And also, of course, with Harry. So, and I've seen videos of what happens in these diseases.
Awful.
And you don't want your baby to suffer with that.
Yeah.
It is a moral dilemma. Now that we have the knowledge, before we didn't really have the knowledge. Now it's more open. Like, you know, there are groups bringing this out in the open.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was learning about vaccines back in the day, I mean, before I went to uni, I think too, that was always like they're made in eggs. So I was like, okay, this made in chicken eggs, you know, and that's why some people can't take them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess there's the other issue too of government requiring vaccines for children. So, for example, to go to school or childcare, you know, when they go to school, they have to be vaccinated or immunized. Vaccinations more for animals.
Yes,
immunized.
Yeah.
And also when I was sending my children to childcare, they wouldn't have been allowed to attend childcare if I didn't give them those immunizations. So it's a tough one, you know. I think maybe, you know, like you said, as long as we have this moral objection to it and there's no other possible treatment, we kind of are far away enough removed from the actual happening of it, I guess. The production and everything's beyond our controls, nothing we can really do about it.
Yeah.
Except speak out about it and, you know, and campaign for alternatives, because there are alternatives. You know, scientists are smart people. You know, they can come up with lots of ways of doing things. You know, it doesn't have to be the easy way. Just because those cells are available, you don't have to use them.
Yeah, and again, Catholics have a big voice, and we're not alone. There's other Christians out there. There are people of other religious faiths who are completely on board with what we're saying. Yeah. There are non-religious people, atheists even, who are completely on board with us.
Because they find abortion abhorrent just like us, you know?
There's enough critical mass of people who can demand, you know, a difference, who can demand change. And all it takes is firing up your email on your computer for, you know, 10 minutes, writing your objection. If enough people do it, people start to listen, especially, again, if it hits the, you know, if it hits the bottom line financially of a company, then, so there are ways. Some other things I might just offer very quickly as well is I know our discussion has been, you know, just our, again, it's a discussion. It's not a conclusion.
No.
But, it, you know, feel free to, you know, you've got your parish priests. Start with them. You know, sometimes that's good. Or a priest that you know, or if you've got any moral theologian friends, just ask them to speak clearly though. Like,
use dumbed down words.
You know, or someone you know who's a Catholic in good standing who, you know, who can help you out. You can write to your bishops as well. I'm sure that, you know, they can, you know, they or the people who receive their emails can put you in the right direction. If you're in America, even actually if you're around the world, you can call Catholic Answers. They're usually really good at stuff like that.
Yes, yes.
What was it? 1-800-318-7884. I don't know.
Oh, very good. Remember.
Wait, is it 1-800 an Australian number? I don't know. Actually.
Yeah, but I think they use it too.
Yeah.
Or 888.
Oh, no, 888-888-31 Truth, whatever it is. Yeah,
that's it. We listened to it a bit.
We've heard it so many times. Yeah. Anyway, you'll just look on the internet. Don't trust us. If you call that number, you might get a, I don't know, big bill for something else. I don't know.
They do take calls from Australians. I've heard.
They do. We've
heard a few Australians on Catholic Street.
So anyway, but there are agencies out there, you know, Catholic agencies that can guide you, because the thing is as well, there's a particular personal element to this as well, our personal particular circumstances, which might be different to others. And so, again, moral theology might have an answer that's different for one person than it is for another because of what whatever's going on in their lives, their health conditions, pregnancy, whatever else. So there are, you know, even archdiocesan offices have, you know, ways to guide people about this. So don't feel like it's a decision that you have to make on your own. There is guidance out there. And you should certainly make use of it.
Well, shall we talk about something a bit lighter in the science subject, science topic, very quickly?
Yes. Yeah. Let's do this one really quickly. Go for it.
So a quick follow up. So last episode we talked about how we were waiting for the Falcon 9 to launch some astronauts into space with the Dragon capsule on top
of
it.
And it did. Yay.
Oh, but last episode it didn't, remember?
No, that's right. Yeah, we were waiting still. Yeah.
So we were waiting. We got up, 6 a.m., go to bed because nothing's happening. Okay.
You didn't go to bed. You were excited by how they get out of the rocket. Yeah.
You're right. I did a whole spiel about that, which was really interesting, actually. They scheduled it for the following day, which was Sunday morning for us, 5 a.m., and we got up to watch.
Yep.
I got my son Frankie because he was eager to watch. There was no way Harry was going to get up. He's a sleeper. So so we got up, blurry-eyed, turned the TV on, put on Skype because I was Skyping with you and our other brother.
And our brother, that's right.
And they actually took off. Liftoff happened this time, which was so cool. And I was so nervous because, you know, I was like, come on, you can do it. So that was great. Yeah, we saw their launch. So exciting. So exciting to see a manned launch from America again. Historical event. So we watched that. And then I think you guys went to bed after.
I went straight to bed shortly after. I'm going to get in a couple of hours sleep before Mass. Yeah.
I stayed on watching because I wanted to hear what was going on. I was keen to hear you know, the happenings in the Dragon capsule, and they were going to do the first manual flight test. Unfortunately, when they went to do it, they cut to the Vice President and President Trump making a speech instead, so we kind of missed that coverage.
Yeah.
I guess they were excited, and I guess, you know, they had to talk because America, you know, was
politicians have to talk. Yeah, that's right.
You know, it was a historical event for them and even for the head of NASA. He was very excited that it all went down. And
make America space again.
Yeah, that's right. it was so exciting to see. And so 19 hours later,
Yeah.
The guys docked with the space station successfully.
12:30 for us, I should point out.
It was. I couldn't wake up for that, but I did watch the stream. It was like another 4-hour stream that was on YouTube, so I did watch it. Also, when they were speaking from the capsule on the way to the space station, I did watch that, and that was awesome. Yeah, I forgot to mention that, but yeah, that was really great. They gave us a tour of the capsule, and
I liked the toy dinosaur.
The toy dinosaur from their sons.
Yeah. That was great.
Yeah, between their sons, they chose. Sorry, Alexa.
That was my Alexa
butting in.
I should have put it on mute. I don't know what I said to wake it up, but all right. Just to
dinosaur,
prove to everyone that
maybe.
I have it. Yeah, she was telling me about dinosaurs.
That's funny.
Maybe later.
Yes. Yeah, so they had their, what did they call it, anti-gravity detector, something like that. So, yeah, between them two, their sons had chosen this particular dinosaur, very famous glittery dinosaur with sequins all over it. And, yeah, so that was pretty cool. And they're currently at the space station now. And we'll be returning back to Earth in August,
as I know. Yes, because I think in September, there's the first actual, so that was the crew test one, I think.
That's right. It was
An actual crewed mission is going up with 4 people.
Yeah, which will be cool.
Which would be cool. And one of them is Mike Hopkins, who is, and I think we've talked about him before, I'm pretty sure, on the podcast when we did your space episode or landing one a while ago. But but he's a practicing Catholic. He became Catholic shortly before he went up on his first space mission. I've been reading all about it. It's really inspiring. And he was allowed to take communion with him. So he would go every day to the observation window that they've got there, which looks at Earth, and he would take communion and pray there.
Yeah, yeah. It's so cool to see that, you know, the astronauts are able to continue practicing their faith and have the permission to take Holy Communion up there with them, you know, the Eucharist up there with them, so they can partake in Holy Communion while they're there. It's amazing. I think he was saying something like, you know, he was there with the Russian astronauts and they would just leave him alone for those few minutes while they were up there. And they, you know, everybody has their religious practices, you know, that they're allowed to practice their rituals while they're there, which is wonderful. It was such a nice thing to see, you know, such a multicultural, accepting, you know, environment.
Ecumenical,
in the space station. It's not just about science. It's also about spirituality, which is pretty cool.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, so very exciting. We will be talking about the next launch.
We'll be about more. Yes, yeah. Yes. All right.
And
so
Lindsay, one thing I have to say, I think I have put you onto watching all these launches now, because now it's you who tells me when there's a launch.
I'll talk about this in the next segment, because I now have an app that tells me about the launches. So that's how you know. So why don't we move on to talking about technology?
The Enterprise computer system is controlled by 3 primary main processors. Cross-linked with a redundant Mellicorps RAM stack, 14 kiloquad interface modules. The core element is based on an FTL nanoprocessor with 25 bilateral kilolaterals, 20 of those being slaved into the primary Heisenfram terminal. Now, you do know what a bilateral kilolateral is.
Well, of course I do.
So this is a segment where we talk about technology that we're using that's good for our lives and that we enjoy or that entertains us as well. So this will probably be a bit more lighthearted discussion, which is good.
We end it with a light note today.
And I'll be brief about mine, but I've got 2 apps that I'd like to share. The first one is called Next Spaceflight. So a colleague from work actually showed me this, and it's an app that can send you notifications about when a new rocket launch is going to happen. So it's got lots of rocket launches from all around the world. And if it's being streamed live anywhere, it will give you a link so that you can watch it. So the other day at work, this same colleague and I, we sat in front of a computer and we were watching SpaceX's Starlink launch. So when they launched 60 Starlink satellites, so we were enjoying that, which was great. It told me about the Rocket Lab USA, which is the... They actually launch from New Zealand, which is cool. And they've got a smaller class of rocket, which can launch sort of smaller.
The Electron, it's so cute.
Electron, it's very cool.
Yeah. 17 meters compared to 70 meters. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So you and I and our brother were watching this again online, but unfortunately it got scrubbed because of those high winds in Wellington, windy. In New Zealand. Yeah.
It wasn't down in Wellington. It was still in North Island. It was up in Mahia Bay. But down in Wellington, it gets really windy, extremely windy. Yeah. So I could see that the winds obviously carried it because the weather patterns change so quickly there. Yeah. It's just a long, thin island. And so the weather just carries over and changes. You never know. You don't know what you're going to get. But anyway,
And what's interesting is I did some more research. I've gone rocket crazy lately. So they're going down the reusable route as well, except their method, which is really interesting, is to the rocket goes up. The first stage comes back to Earth and then deploys a parachute, and then it's caught by a helicopter. It's actually really cool, and then brought to a ship. So
that's pretty cool.
They've got Rocket Lab USA have a great video. Like it's like a 360 video where you can look around from the bottom of the helicopter and actually see the process happening. So
awesome.
Because they did a test one, which is cool.
Awesome.
And my other app, sticking with the space theme, it's called Space Agency, and it's a game. And oh my gosh, I'm so addicted to it. I've just put all my other games away, and I love this one. So in this one, you are basically the head of a space agency, like a commercial space agency, and you're given like contracts or missions that you have to complete. So you might be told launch a satellite into Earth's orbit, or launch a habitation hub for a space station, and then dock it with a space station. Put probes around the sun. There's even like covert op ones where you have to launch an explosive to a foreign satellite. You know, that's being used for whatever. Spying, whatever else, attach the explosive and blow it up. So it's got all these cool ones, but you start from the ground up. So you build the rocket, you put all the stages in that you think you need, you launch the rocket, you separate the stages yourself, and then you fly, you fly it, through the solar system, around the Earth or whatever. So that's a lot of fun. It's $2.99 in Australian dollars. So that must be like $1.49 in the United States or whatever, but Space Agency, a lot of fun and really good for your kids, because my son, through family sharing now, he's got it on his phone and he was telling me what was happening at a rocket launch. He's going, oh, look, the fairing's being separated and things like that. So it's really cool. So, and what happens is by playing this game, you get to understand the different sections of the rocket too.
That's cool. Yeah.
So Space Agency, totally recommend that. And Caroline, what was your recommendation?
Okay. So I've been, I'm a bit of a Nintendo fan. I've got from the GameCube to now, although I haven't got the Switch yet. I know bad form, but I'm getting it soon. Okay. So because I'm a Nintendo fan, recently Nintendo, I think it's when the Switch came out, but they've released some games for the phone, for iPhone. I'm not sure about probably the Android type phones as well, but definitely for iPhone. And one of them is Mario Kart, which is an old classic that a lot of people love. So I was so excited. So I downloaded it onto my phone and, of course, I was immediately hooked. So you can play the game. You got your different classes of car, 50cc, 100cc, 155cc. I think that's what they are. And you play against other people in the world. So it's an online thing. You do have to get a Nintendo account for it, but it's not something you pay for. You just have to sign up with them. But I've already been signed up with them because I have the Wii U is the last one that I've been playing.
You're a Nintendo person.
Yes. And it's really cool. It's great. It's a beautiful display on your screen. It's not pixelated. It's just a beautiful, seamless game. The controls take a little bit of a while to get used to because obviously you don't have buttons. So you just kind of have to tap.
Touchscreen.
Yeah, you got to tap your screen on left and right for the controls and then double tap to shoot, the items that you get, the shells and whatever bombs and things. Yeah. So, the mushroom to speed up and all that.
I like throwing bananas on the tracks.
Bananas. So it's super fun, and I've been coming number one in most of my races. So I've been able to upgrade in my vehicle and all the rest of it. So it's been awesome.
Cool. I've been downloading it while you're talking, so I've got
definitely play it. You're going to get hooked. It's so much fun. And on side note, I've been rediscovering my old games and playing them as well. So I've been going back to playing Mario Kart on the 64 and and then getting out my Pikmin and playing it on the Wii. And, you know, so
Nintendo games never get old. They're so replayable. No, yeah, they're so much fun. Yeah. And great family games too.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you've got your gold consoles, just hold on to them and get playing again, because like even the nostalgia, you know, brings back memories of when you were whatever age when you had this console and what you were doing. Yeah. And yeah, I've just been having fun getting back into all that and showing my kids the old consoles, you know. Yeah. And yeah, so it's not just all new fandangled technology. The old fandangled technology is quite fun too.
It was so, new once. Yeah.
It was. So there we go.
Very good. So Mario Kart, that's Caroline's recommendation, everyone. So have you played it already? Yeah. Or let us know. Are you a fanatic like us? It's interesting because Mario Kart has come out on, I don't know, every console since the Super Nintendo, I think it was.
But
it doesn't matter that it's basically the same game, you know, repackaged with new levels and whatever else. It's just so much fun. So it's great. Yeah.
And I have to say, out of all of them, I still love Nintendo 64 version. I don't know. I just find that one the most fun.
It was really good. I liked that version too.
It really was. I mean, despite the graphics being so much better on, say, like the Wii U or the Switch, you know, they're much smoother graphics and all that, I find the gameplay a lot more satisfying, I guess. I don't know. I just find it fun.
And can I say, it doesn't matter which version of Mario Kart I've played, Rainbow Road's always impossible for me.
Oh, I agree. That's so hard. And it just makes you go like really woozy and you can't stay on the track. Yeah. Anyway.
All right. So let's wrap it up there. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening to episode 35 of Catholics of Oz. Before we go, we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create the Catholics of Oz. So today we would love to thank Robert B., Megan S. Actually, I was looking at that. Do Americans say Megan? Because I know here we say Megan.
We say Megan,
Okay, so whichever way her name is pronounced, I'm going to say Megan for now.
Very special thank you. Yes.
So a very special thank you to Megan S., Jake L., Jerry G., and Kevin K. Through your generous donations and through the donations of our patrons at sqpn.com/give, they make it possible for the Catholics of Oz and all of the other wonderful shows on StarQuest to continue. So if you'd like to join them, you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. Also, we would love to know your thoughts about today's episode, especially today's episode, because we had a discussion about some pretty heavy topics. Yeah. And again, we don't want to provide the definitive, this is what you should think or what you should do, but we would love to know to help inform us as well to come to a reconcilable position on some of these things.
Yeah.
What do you think? Are there sources or resources that you have that we could do some further research on? Because we've done a bit of research, but we would certainly be open to doing more. So
and experiences and things.
Yeah, any stories, anything. So if you feel comfortable to share, we would be more than open to listening. And also, let's talk about how you can find us and talk about these things further. So you can do that by visiting us at on Facebook. So SQPN's Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Also, we have our own Catholics of Oz Facebook page at facebook.com/CatholicsofOz, spelt with a Z at the end. And you can talk about our latest episodes there. You can also email us if you like, if you feel more comfortable with that, catholicsofoz@sqpn.com. Caroline, thank you so much for being on this show today.
Thank you, Lindsay.
And once again, I'm Lindsay Sant, and thank you for listening to The Catholics of Oz on StarQuest.